What's the deal, my people? You know it is Don Tony Teflon, Phil the Issues Guy. This is the Escaping From Podcast Deep Dive. We are here going through episode 2, season 1 of From, going through the deep dive and looking back on everything that we have seen and see if we can pick up some clues on what's going on. Phil, what's going on with you, bro?
Not too much. Great to be back here talking about this series with you. And this was a great episode of From. Looking back and having rewatched the series, I think only one other time all the way through leading into season 2. I think this might be one of my favorite episodes. It's just, it explains everything going on in the town really well with the narrative that's going on in the story. It's scary as all heck. And yeah, I said heck because we're in the first 30 seconds of a YouTube video. But it's just a really good episode of television, Tony.
It really is. It might be the best episode that they've had of all.
It's one of them.
It might be. And it's definitely top 5.
There's so many great monologues in it too. Each Donna has maybe her best moment. I mean, she has a lot of great moments, mm-hmm. but when she's telling the story about her sister, Sarah's really good in this episode and the shower scene coming out with her brother and that whole dynamic and the brother looking at her like she's crazy. And I mean, we're going to go from this point for point, but there's just so much in this episode and Jim trying to take on Boyd and Boyd just stops him with a finger. He's like, come on, man.
Like broken death grip. Are you okay now? You good?
Are you okay? You doing all right? You breathing okay? Great episode for Kenny too. This was just an amazing Kenny episode.
No doubt about it. Let's say what up to some people who are here. Brian Nash is in the building rocking with us right now. Tim is in here. Thank you, Tim, for being a channel member and rocking with us. Savant is in the building rocking with us. Fred Grace, another member of the channel, is in here rocking with us. She Does the Most is in here rocking with us. John Haymaker, another member of the channel, is rocking with us. OA Callie is up in here. Bo Ismail is in here rocking with us. Thank you all for you people who are here. There's more people here, but not everyone is commenting, so we can't say what up to you. We'll try. We're going to get right into it then and just start this episode off. What's going on?
Before we start, I just want to say special thanks to all the people that are listening to the podcast as well. We had a bunch of downloads for the podcast. We've just reached 5,000 lifetime or for the, you know, the 12 episodes that we've done, about 5,000 downloads or streams. We just want to thank everyone that's listening to the audio cast too. We'll keep these coming. That's part of the reason Tony wanted to jump on here and do this, to be able to give you guys some content before season 3, because everyone on the YouTube channel is, you know, going to watch stuff that Tony puts out in different videos like that, and I'll put out some From content, but we wanted to make sure we get you guys on the podcast as well. So thank you to everyone that's subscribed. 100%. Please get those ratings and all that stuff on iTunes to help us reach more and more people.
Number one show for the fans, by the fans, and here we go.
Cats. Welcome, cats. Oh, Bo, we're going as deep as Kenny is driving with that axe. He's just, This is another point that makes this episode awesome, Tony. It has that Breaking Bad bottlenecky kind of thing to it. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but where we see the end of the episode at the beginning and then it comes back, and it works really well in this context.
And it shows, like, when he's first chopping, it's lighter and it gets deeper and harder and just do and gets louder and louder until it breaks at the end, you know, before. So I liked the way it did. And I also liked the way it was done. It's just the end of the... I think this is the only time they've done this.
Yeah.
We did it one time and they did it this episode. And I thought that it was a very good way. Because, you know, we left off with them escaping and everything else. And again, if you want to call in and give your opinion, 781-990-8509. Call in. We love to hear from you. We'll keep it going. But you real quick, did you see how they had some? See, you don't pick things up unless you listen to the audio. When you see, they had some voices there. Some voices were saying something, and then it went right into the seizure of Ethan. You know, maybe we should run that back so people could definitely. But you could definitely hear there's some type of voices there And then he goes into the seizure.
They make sure they hammer that point in that this is happening because he's there later on in the scene too. When Christy asks, or later on in the episode, when she asks Jim, does he have seizures at home too? And Jim's like, no, it's the first time. And Christy just gets this look on her face like, oh, damn. And then she quickly changes the subject.
No doubt about it. Let's go.
Hands under the neck. Under the neck. Good.
I want to stop, Christy.
We're good. Just we're doing good. Keep the airway open.
Let me go back. I missed it. So let's see.
Hands under the neck. Under the neck. Good.
All right. So it's in between.
Hands under the neck.
Listen to the voice.
Yes. Yeah.
Under the neck.
Heard that, Phil, right?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, something.
Kill them all in the boy.
Hey, something. It's someone talking. Maybe someone was able to take that audio and beef it up. Maybe we could make out exactly what they're saying. But they're definitely voices saying something. And then it goes right to Ethan's seizures.
Considering who he sees at the end of the episode, is it the boy in white, do you believe, talking to him?
It could be. It's someone talking to him and everything without a shadow of
doubt. It's probably Hanukkah. The boy in white, because considering where the episode ends.
Yeah, happy Hanukkah, too, to everybody out there who celebrates.
And I don't think it's the same people that are talking to Sarah.
No, I don't think that either. Because they can only speak to Sarah. They said that specifically.
Yeah. John Haymaker.
Ethan. He's breathing. He's stable. Okay. What's your pulse?
This is my favorite part of the episode. Jim trying to be a big boy. I need to be a big boy. I make roller coasters.
I'm not here to help, Jim.
Boyd is like, I was in Oz. Stop this. And The Lost Island. And Sons of Anarchy. Stop this.
Yeah, you gotta calm down, son. You can't be trying to.
Or just in this world, you know, he's a military.
All right, so we'll stop before we get into the next one. But yeah, it's an interesting scene because we do see that, you know, Jim tries to overpower Boy, tries to, the monsters fool him right off the bat, right? And he doesn't explain to him in this scene everything, but we know that, you know, they're there and they're manipulating and they do things. We didn't never heard them really do that before until this scene. This is the first scene. That we actually, I mean, we've seen the grandma monster do it, but we didn't see it on the level of this, of a bunch of them. Hey, you need help in there and things like that. We didn't see that.
We really learned so much more. If the first episode, and this is a very loose kind of thing, if the first episode dedicates a little bit more to learning about the town, this really focuses on fleshing out what the townspeople know about the creatures, where we get into, again, the Donna monologue that I'm sure we're going to listen to later, where she talks about them enjoying themselves and taking their time. And Kenny talks later about how they just walk and they never run. You notice how they never run. They're just walking. And they're stalking us. They're taking their time. We learn more about all of that in this episode. I think that's part of why it's my favorite. They seem like such an insurmountable force at this point in this episode.
Yeah.
They just cannot be stopped. But the way Boyd talks about, you have a gun. Yeah. So it's, or Christy's dream where she sees the talisman fall and imagines what would happen if Jim went all Jim, which he easily could if Boyd doesn't stay awake and stay vigilant on him all night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's go to the next scene.
A crew running from in the rain to try to get to Colony House. And Jade is effed up, dragging ass.
Hey, you guys,
This is a great episode for Ellis too. Him and Kenny's thing, I forgot about that, and it's really believable. Like, just two people just annoyed with each other in this situation. Not to mention the relationship with Boyd. You know, like, Kenny's pissed off for Boyd because Boyd can't be.
Julie, what are you doing? Don't you recognize me?
We'll stop it right there. So we see it here. I'm running. They're trying to get inside the house of this scene. This picks up right where last episode left off of them in the rain running, trying to drag everybody in there. But I would guess the number one thing would be here. But we hear the creature right off the bat. Look at Julie. Julie says her name.
Knows her name.
And says, you don't recognize me. And Julie looks back at him like, basically like, should I? Yep. Is what she's saying. Like, she squints at him. And then that's when Kenny puts the bullet in him. And then I think that's when she realizes, she snaps back to her senses there.
Right. Donna at that point had already come down and said, let them in, because they got to the door. People at Colony House were like, no, don't let them in. Don't let them in. Donna said not to let them in. Donna comes rushing down quick and goes, no, don't let them in. Ellis is out there.
Because it's Ellis. Ellis wasn't there.
They're all dead.
She wouldn't let them in. The only reason she opened that door is because Ellis was there, and that was it. And because she loves Fatima like a daughter, and she knows this is her man, and she's no way she's going to let this guy die out
there. Yeah, and she also, I mean, maybe less so because Donna doesn't give a crap. She doesn't want to make a complete enemy of Boyd by allowing his son to die in that situation. I don't think she's looking to go to war with the town at that point, and that's a declaration of war to Boyd if he heard about that situation. He wouldn't think logically about that, considering his other familiar losses. This was a really intense moment. I forgot how close they got. Julie was Ray looking at the Vigo painting for a second there. Vigo. But honestly, I don't know about you, Tony, but for me, if I was in that situation too, and someone said, hey, Phil, what's going on? I was just talking to you today about someone pulling up next to me in a car. That could easily have been a creature reaching out and got me. I rolled down my window. If someone acts like they know me, my instinct is to do that too. It's not like
anyone. If someone just rolls up to you and says, hey, didn't I see you somewhere? I mean, I've used that line on women before.
Yeah, me too.
I'd never met. And they said, didn't I meet you somewhere before? And
it's the oldest line in the book.
Yeah, they'll start talking. Did we win? What was this? You know? So then someone would use a cheap, you know, date. In my dreams, baby.
Wait. I gotta do that, Tony. I'm sorry. It has to be done. I have to have this on cue to make it better, but I was just gonna do the drum, the dun-dun, but I don't have it on cue. Dun-dun. There we go.
You know, it's something like that. So, but yeah, it's in all seriousness, when someone says your name and everything else, you know what I mean? That is what you think. You know what I mean? That is the way it goes down and everything else. You think that this is what it is. Like, they definitely know you, and it makes you stop in your tracks for a second. But it also shows us, how is it possible that these people just got there, but this monster knows her name?
Right.
Why does he know it?
I mean, that if we're getting into this breakdown thing and if we're getting into the breakdown thing of it all and thinking about one of your theories, I didn't mean to just do that on one of your theories. I just finally clicked it. But one of your theories is that they're in some sort of loop.
Yeah.
And that they would know who Julie is. And that's an interesting way of being able to mess with them, in the sense of a Westworldian kind of sense of, they've gone through this loop several times. So that's an extra way that these creatures can mess with them, because he knows that's Julie. Mm-hmm. And if it's not that case, are they, like, let's look at the alternative, that they're not in a loop.
Okay.
What would be the alternative? That they're psychic and that they can read them, that they get a fax printout with the minute the people cross into town?
It would only be that if the people that are controlling them is somehow a hive mind, maybe you could say that. I mean, we're trying to get into stuff. Maybe it's some hive minded things that they know, and they're implanted with their memories or something. And to know that would mean that the people who was in control know exactly who they're bringing in and why they're bringing them in. If that's the case, the people that are in control are running this whole
right situation. They're doing it on purpose. They're actively
selecting that family, selecting
those people. And I'm not, do you think it's, I mean, both things could be the case. Do you think, as an overall secondary question, do you think people are picked specifically, or it's a sense of a randomness to who gets brought to Frumland?
No, I think they know who they're pulling in there.
Yeah, me too.
I think they're pulling the same people all the time, and I think that's just the way it goes and everything, but I definitely think that they know who's going in there. Again, you want to call in, definitely call. You see the number on the bottom. We didn't get one call last week. Hopefully we get at least one.
Someone call on and talk to us. And if you're in the live chat, make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We know some people do watch this stuff without subscribing. We're trying to get Tony to 100,000 in the next year. So keep it subbing on the YouTube channel. If you're listening to the podcast, jump on and me on YouTube, trying to get me to 20,000. I'm at 60,000. Jump on over and subscribe to me as well. But help us both out here, and doesn't hurt. But so the Colony House people are looking at this. So you think, and I agree with you, if Ellis isn't there, Donna lets them die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that too. 100%. You know,
I think it happens. Let's keep going.
Smart protocol.
Another car, there's an action. So
this jumps right to the Jade.
Two cars. Never seen that before.
Oh, right to people in the live chat. Tony and I need your help. What is this character's name that is into Jade? The girl that
the hot girl.
The dark hair girl.
The hot girl. But she brings up something here again. She says it right then. Was this in the first car? He goes, no, it was another car. She goes, two cars, never seen that before.
Right. And later, just to make reference of this, I know we're going to get to it, but Victor later on, when he's talking to Julie, says it doesn't happen often, and when it happens, it's special. Mm-hmm. That's at least what Victor says about it. So we know it has happened before, just not in recent times, to the point where Victor would remember it, but not where brunette person... that Tony and I can't remember her character's name, because spoiler alert, she dies. And she wasn't in season two, and she wasn't as memorable as Father Cautry or some of the other characters and I don't remember Sarah's brother's name either. What is his name? Josh? Is that his name? Oh, Sarah.
Who?
What's Sarah's brother's name? I don't remember his name.
I don't even know his brother. Trudy is the name. Yes. Thank you, T-Ville.
Thank you, Tivo.
Trudy is the name of this woman.
Yeah, we have protocols, Jen Hack. We grow weed, and we can't allow you to mess with our crop and run amok. That being said, and I agree with this as well. I don't know about you, Tony. I think this is a smart plan by Donna. The tie them up. Kenny's wrong in this situation. New people come in. You don't know. Look at next season. If we look to season two with Randall. I mean, you need to tie people up.
Especially at night, because if someone opens the door, you're all dead.
Like that.
All dead. So you have to keep these people under lock and key. You can't keep them. There's no other way to do it, because these people, listen, you jump inside someone's house, someone's breathing, you're going to try to get out. Of course you are. She's going to grab you. You could tell Tabitha, let's go and sneak out. They're all asleep right now. And everyone dies.
Yep.
So she's doing the right thing. Kenny is 100% wrong.
Jim was this close. Boyd wasn't going to let him through. But I mean, he was just going to go, oh, I'm letting them in.
They came back for us.
Yeah, and the moment that Tabitha got untied, if that guy wasn't there with the gun, she was probably going straight for the front door. And that would have meant the death of most of Colony House. John Haymaker, yes, in Massachusetts. I'm not sure about New York.
For
legal weed.
Oh, yes. Yes. All right, let's keep it going.
It is relevant to Colony House.
It's a nice watch.
Right. Someone said, we're dragging. I got to put this back up on screen again. Her name is Clothes Snatcher. She steals everyone's clothes. She's Iron Jade's ring and clothes. Oh, well, I could take this. Klepto. We'll call her Klepto.
Why did you bring me here? Because I want you to see.
Oh, okay. So I forgot about that. So the next scene is Fatima takes Julie to show her Ellis's artwork. And what I said in my notes here is just Fatima is a great girlfriend. Like, especially right at the beginning here, where it doesn't seem like she has as much weight as she has later on to everything going on at this point. She's so supportive, showing off the artwork, putting Julie in the room so she can see Ellis with his shirt off. You know, he's cute. He's going to want to paint you. You know, she's sort of building Julie up, calling her hot right from the beginning. It's Fatima's a really good person to have as your sponsor.
And when Pekka came on the channel, she said that she played it, that she did that with to others what she wished was done for her.
Yep.
And that's how she played the character, and that's what she thinks Fatima is trying to do here.
And also you can just see, I don't want to say idol worship, but just the sense of it's in a positive way. Like when you're a freshman and your cousins are seniors and you're looking up to them a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of that right away where Julie's just immediately looking to Fatima like she's so cool. And it makes sense that their friendship develops through this. I mean, there's a little other stuff I forgot from season one, but we get into a little other dynamic between them, but ultimately like a great friendship between the two of them. And the fact that at the end of this episode, anyways, the Matthews want to stay at Colony House probably has a lot to do with Julie's relationship with Fatima and feeling like I feel comfortable with her. She's not going to let anything happen to us.
100%.
It is a shame, Matthew. Matthew says it's a shame she's going to be drowned at some point.
What happens if they get in?
Kat still doesn't trust her.
You have a gun. Why don't you use it? This won't do any good. You just got to trust me. I don't know you.
But you got to trust me. Do you trust him, Tony? Do you trust Boyd in this situation? Or are you, if you put yourself in Jim's shoes, you're protecting your daughter's laying there, you know, not in real life, is, you know, laying there in that same situation that Ethan's in. Do you trust Boyd?
I would have to. I would have no choice. He has a gun at that particular time. You have no choice but trusting him. He's always going to kill you. But we hear right here. For the first time, exactly what the talisman does. And he says it with the talisman in the window, they cannot get in only if they let you.
Yep.
Right. So that's the first time we hear. We've seen a talisman before this. We've seen people touch it. We've seen it thrown on the floor, but we never got told exactly what the talisman does and everything else. And that's what we heard. We also hear Boyd say here that these creatures are not human.
Right. And we also later in the episode get through that Donna monologue what it was like before Boyd found those, hiding in the woods, running around. So we get so much backstory about the island, so much backstory about the town in this particular episode and how they were living. And I don't know, we'll talk about this more as time goes on, but I've always thought, in the sense of looking at it like it's a game to these creatures, that and again, I'm asking this as almost a rhetorical question. Do the talismans have any power, or is it just the like honor game ghouls kind of thing where it was too easy for them and there's a sport to all of this, so they had to give them a stuff? Is there any magic property or scientific stuff radiating off those things?
If it's anything, it's going to be scientific. There's no magic here at all.
Right.
So it's going to be scientific if it's anything, coming off. But again, we see the monsters can touch it because when the grandma monster in episode one left, it was on the floor.
That's what makes me think it's some sort of reality show game sort of thing. Not for the whole thing. I'm just mean with the fact of these talismans. Like, it's just a matter of if they see the talisman up and that doesn't fall down, we're not allowed to go in there. That's our orders.
The whole thing. Like he says in the window, so like they can see it in the window. But when it's in the when it's on the wall inside the house, they can't see it there.
It's true. Maybe
they know that it's up though, and they're not allowed to enter with it there.
Maybe it's has some. Again, I'm pushing my narrative right here a little bit too far. But maybe they have some sort of detector that detects the
radiation detector.
Yeah, something like that.
Or it's something that when it.
The PKE meter. Sorry, I'm Ghostbusters.
It could be so. Let's continue a little bit further.
Yeah, Jim doesn't trust anything he says, and he shouldn't. I believe our next scene that we get in is Ellis tying up Jade and the girl watching the body, which we already heard.
What is it?
Christy,
what is it called?
Christy, hey, stop on the phone.
Oh, this is, okay. Christy losing her shit for a second. She's awesome.
But it also tells us, again, more rules of the talisman. She's concerned if it falls. So now we know that if the talisman isn't hanging, then it doesn't work. If it's on the floor, it doesn't work. It has to be hanging up. So in this scene, we're getting all of our things about how the talismans work, but they're not telling us why they work.
Now, T-Ville says, low-key, I thought Ellis's paintings was going to mean more. The theory that Fatima was the lonely dragon in the upper right-hand corner of his paintings before she came to the town. But I was wrong. As of now, I mean, we don't know where it might go later, but I did think it was interesting that we got introduced to Ellis's paintings even before the drawings. And I wonder if our friend who listens to the show sometime, who is responsible for the drawings, I wonder if he did Ellis's work as well.
I'll have to ask him.
But
I tried to get him to come on, but he'd rather just stay in the back.
Yeah, yeah. We've asked him a couple times. He just likes listening. He just likes listening. Yeah,
he just likes to stay in the background. All right, let's go. Keep going.
I'm going to give him a shout out in a second just to get his information.
Okay, listen to me, kiddo. Listen, hey, breathe.
Breathe. It's going to be okay.
What's outside? Let's just think about what's in here. Focus on him. Okay? Got this, kiddo. You got it. You got this. Right? We focus on Ethan. We all stay. Tell us what we need to do.
Eddie, it's not right. Ow, no, no, please,
Bobby,
it hurts.
Oh. It's okay.
Got it, okay. All right. Wipe the pressure.
Great. Oh, so good.
I can't hear a child scream. It hurts me. And I'll say I'm notorious over the years talking about my channel in here being hard on child actors that aren't good. Ethan's pretty damn good.
He does a great job there.
He does a great damn job.
He does a great job screaming. Does a great job pretending that he's hurt and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel it when they're pulling that thing out of his leg. Yeah.
He does bad child actors run fingers down the chalkboard to me, and Ethan is awesome. He pulls it all off really well.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Chrissy, hey, breathe. Okay, Grace, let's go. I'm gonna stitch him up.
Jen Hack, I thought that might have happened as well. She was definitely eyeballing him, and knowing what we know about Jade after the fact, I don't know if he would mind that. They're so lucky. I'm not going to say lucky, but in the sense of the perfect team there at the right time right now. Like, Christy is just so dominant in what she does on the island.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, we're getting into the Sarah scene now, which she plays crazy, really believable and really well. This whole moment, her talking to herself, going back and forth, with some Harvey Two-Faced stuff. It's really, really well done. And she's extremely believable in this situation. Are you okay? Is someone here? Do we have to?
No, come? No one's here.
Okay. you gave a look like someone was coming into your house for a second.
No, I heard someone upstairs. So. But no, that's probably one of the most important things that we see, that we hear in this right now, is this Sarah scene that we just heard. She's getting the people are communicating with her, trying to get her to do something, and she's fighting them. She doesn't want to do it. She's saying, yeah, I don't want to do this, but they're telling her that it has to be done, that you have to do this. And that's the key. And I know people want to say Sarah's crazy and everything else, but she's not. She doesn't want to do these things. But the people who are also trapped, they're also trapped. You got to understand, they're trapped too, right? And they're telling her this is the only way that they get to go home. Her. She has to do these killings for them all to go home. So why did they choose these specific?
I was just going to ask you that, Tony.
To kill that gets them home. What do they have?
Let's look at the two people that she killed in this situation. Jade's buddy. You could say that if Jade has his buddy there, they're just going to do drugs at Colony House the whole time and be distracted. And Jade, without his buddy, is a more active force to be able to help figure out a way out of the town. And what was the other Kenny's father dying in that situation? Could say that the two most important people moving forward to get them out of this town, that whatever voice thinks is Kenny and Jade, to have them prime focused on their job of battling all this. I mean, that's the only rationale of why it was those.
Well, I have it right now. I know exactly why it's both of these people, but I would have to talk about the ending for it to happen to go down. But I know exactly why these people had to be killed. Should I just say it right now?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing. Part of doing this is knowing the end.
The reason why they told them that they had to be killed. Number one, they had to kill. They killed this guy to get Jade to focus on the task at hand.
Yep.
And Jade, what's focused that we see is him trying to figure out exactly what that symbol means. That's what that comes up, right? And then it kills Kenny's dad. And at the end of this episode, you hear Kenny talk about playing chess with his father and that the game would always end the same, where he had one piece left and he'd be running out of spots to go.
He tells Boyd
straight up, I think we're running out of squares to go. And that's what gets Boyd to go off and look and search with Sarah. So that is why Kenny's father had to go, because it got Boyd out there to start searching for more blocks for them to move into, because he said he thought that they were just running out of some blocks.
That makes a lot of sense. Katz adds the nurse as well. I would say the nurse is just collateral damage in this situation.
Yeah, collateral damage. The nurse is not important. Because she's dead too.
Statistically unimportant. She wasn't good at chess. She doesn't matter. We're not bored.
Those are the reasons why those people had to die. And this is why they told her to kill these people specifically.
They
also told her to kill the boy, and she thought they were talking about Ethan later.
Kill the boy, Jon Snow. Kill the boy. Sorry. Kill the boy. So that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I was with you with the Jade thing. You know, I figured that out too, but I couldn't figure out where Kenny's dad got into it. But that makes a lot of sense, Tony. T says, if Jade was there, Jade would not interact. Yeah, if Jade's buddy was there, he would not interact with the townsfolk. They would do the rest of the ecstasy on his brother, on his buddy's body that got buried or something, and they would be smoking all the weed in Colony House and hanging out in the bar with our shady bartender. Basically, what would happen? And no. I don't think Jade would be good for anybody.
Know that about. All right, let's continue.
I don't know why they blocked that one, Muhammad. I had to prove that. Kill the boy and let the man be born. For some reason, YouTube held that comment.
Probably kill in it.
Oh, yeah, kill. That's true. I didn't think about that. Lady Stoneheart, Kimmy G, welcome.
All of it?
Spanish one says.
You're fucking crazy. You don't know how many.
Okay, this is a great scene. And it is. Dawn is so calm in this scene until she's not.
How many hours did you spend in the car going in a straight line? Somehow ended up being a circle. You saw those things outside. I don't know what I saw. That's what my sister said. God damn it, she was stubborn.
This is the only time she really talks about her sister, right?
The only time.
Yep, I'm gonna pour you a drink. My sister is a real character.
I guess this is the biggest evidence for Donna being shady, too. How fucked up the situation is.
Excuse
me.
Me and her, we were on a little hunting trip. We saw that goddamn tree in the road.
Yeah, we all see the tree.
Right. Everyone sees the tree. Oh. Fucking crows.
She's so good. You can feel the theater in her, too. She's doing the theatrical monologue here.
We'd already been driving. There's a motel a few miles back. I said, oh, let me grab a room, start fresh in the morning. The tree is cleared. My sister didn't want the deer to spoil. So we ran out of here. It was already dark when we got here. First time through, didn't even stop. Saw some folks in the road, drove right by. Second time through, one of them stood in front of the car. Wouldn't get out of the way. Just stood there, smiling. My sister was gonna run this son of a bitch over. Never did have much patience for assholes. Instead, she grabbed her shotgun and got out of the car and started screaming at it, making all sorts of threats. Just stood there, smiling. Never forget how I stood there.
Fucking kills me, dude. I know people that would do shit like that. Joe would do that. He'd run out. I'm getting you.
And this is another reason, right? So when you hear Donna, she's talking about her sister. She knows her sister is tough and everything else. And the creature... You know, it skins her face off just like they'd skin those deer, which means they had to know that they skinned the deer.
Yeah.
Right? They had to know that that's what they did, and that's the reason why they did that specifically to her sister, for Donna, to say, we're going to do to you exactly what y'all did to these deer.
Yeah.
And to put the fear of God in Donna.
I think it's also interesting that she points out that they tortured her, kept her alive as much as possible until she was done later on in the episode when we see Kenny's father dead. I made specific note of this in my notes of it, that his face is fairly untouched. They make sure they show that didn't go slow. They ripped apart his body, every inch of it, and left him almost untouched from the neck up. And that's a way of, you know, just keeping, making it hurt that much more to the people that find these people, and make it hurt for the people that they're doing this to as well, by making sure that they stay as conscious as possible while this crap's happening. Good question, Jen.
Yeah, it was her. Jenna Hack asked, her sister was killed by Smiley. I don't think so. It was Smiley, because I think that if that was the case, when she's seen the dead body of Smiley's, they may have mentioned that. She just said the monsters are smiling. They all smile. Every one of them smile. So yeah. Smiley's smile is just more pronounced.
He's just the best at smiling of the whole group.
He's the best smiler of them. But they all smile. So I don't think it was what we can. I think we can't use the smile as a reflection of was she killed by that.
And yeah, this is just a great, like I said, great monologue. Tabitha plays this really well too, in the holy crap reactions. Like, how can this possibly be actually true? But you just see it as when she mentions the tree and all of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they do an excellent job of bringing us into this world through the Matthews family. Say what you want about the Matthews family. Jim can be annoying. Tabitha can be annoying. Julie can be annoying. Ethan's okay. They all are a perfect lens piece going into this season and discovering From World. And you kind of needed to do this because it's not starting from scratch. It's an ongoing thing. So you need to have a vehicle in there. And I think the Matthews family are good people to do that because they're so obstinate. They're so, no, we're doing our own thing. And yes. So we get to see the extremes of this place through them.
I can't even tell you which direction. They seem to be everywhere. So I found a place to hide. Some bushes at the edge of the forest.
Oh, imagine that shit.
That's what people used to do to survive here. Crawl into the bushes, find a place to hide. Pray that they made it through till morning. So, there I was, crouching in those bushes. And when the blood stopped pounding in my head, I realized I could still hear my sister screaming.
Oh! Jesus Christ, these things were
killing her. They're torturing her. Those things out there, they like to hunt. They like to play. So they were making it last. And I just left her there.
That's the line that makes me think that they got introduced the talismans on purpose. They like to play. They like to have a game. So if they're just hunting people in the woods that are hiding in bushes, at a certain point in time, that becomes too easy. So you gotta give them something to upgrade. Or, I mean, the other alternative is that whoever these other beings are that are trying to help introduce these talismans. Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah, so exactly, and we're also dealing with it. When we heard this story for the first time, this is what made people think that, you know, maybe Donna was lying about this story because it didn't seem to be in the same characteristic of killing that we've seen from these creatures. Yeah. But she was basically saying exactly what we see in season two when they take the rod and stick it through the girl's head.
And you could say, again, we see it a little later in this episode with Kenny's dad, who definitely, like I said, didn't look like he went easy. But you're right about the second season, really, with the pleasure that they take in taking their time.
Exactly. And just playing around and having a game. And she said, we're going to have some fun with you.
Yep.
You know, and doing all that. So, yeah, people thought that Donna was lying, but this does make it seem like she was telling the truth here. If this is the truth, is she the mole? If she's the mole, she sacrificed her sister in order to get there to have a story to tell if this story actually happened or not. We have no proof. There still is no proof that the sister did die. We have no body. We have no other person that's seen it. This is just Donna's word. So if you want to say that she is the mole, that would be the reason why to say that she just made this story up just to blend in with everybody.
Yeah, the only person that would know whether she was lying about that or not is Victor, but he has selective memory. So it's not like he's going to be like, oh, I remember your sister. And the way that story's set up is it happened so before.
It happened at nighttime, she said.
Yeah, before she met him.
So conveniently, it happened at night, so no one was out.
Right.
So no one could see her. Everyone's already in the houses. Hiding in the houses and stuff, or just hiding in general because they didn't have the talismans back then.
Right. She came to the group saying, I just lost my sister. Yeah. So that could easily, if you are a Donna mole person, as Tony was saying, this leads a little credence to it in the sense of, I'd like to hear how many people do arrive at night versus arriving during the day. So far, the two people that we've, two groups we've actively seen with our own eyes show up, the bus people and the Matthews and Jade, happened in the daytime. We haven't seen anybody show up at night yet.
Yeah. And she says in this thing that a lot of people do show up at night and they're not that lucky.
Welcome to the show, Jessica. Thank you so much for checking it out.
Definitely. This is the door being opened.
Is this her dream, Christy's
no,
dream?
No, that was the door being opened. Smile, months of smiling, and then the nurse running away.
Oh, okay. Yeah, them noticing that Sarah left the door open.
How's this work?
Arjun, no.
Hey, Christy.
I like how they cut that too, where you I guess you question for a second if the nurse got away, but nope.
Mm-hmm. No, that and that second scene, that dream sequence that they just showed was a great dream sequence. You didn't know if it was a dream. You thought maybe that was the real thing going on, that Jim done fucked up.
Yeah, especially on episode two. You can just see it. And I think it's earlier in the episode two where Jim and Christy are having a conversation about what Jim does and about and her saying, you talk about it in past tense. She's kind of messing with him. And Boyd's just sitting in the corner being like, stop it. He's like mafia donning. He's like, stop it. Stop messing with him.
Tim says, Sarah immediately targeted Ethan, who was already having visions of the boy in white. So it's possible she was instructed to kill Ethan to prevent him from communicating with the boy. I understand what you're saying, but I think that the message was specifically kill the boy. I think he's the only boy there, so she would have to target him. There's no other child but Ethan there, the young boy. So I think there would be no one else for her to target.
Unless they're talking about the boy in white.
Unless they're specifically talking about the boy in white. She's never seen the boy in white, so she doesn't know that.
No, but there is some part of me that thinks it's like catching the white rabbit, that if you kill the boy in white, that ends the game. It's like catching the golden snitch or something. There that might be it, just to take the devil's advocate side of it. If it is the boy in white, maybe that's the way to end the game. You have to kill the boy in white. Maybe somehow that is the, they're like, no, the only way to let us out is killing that damn boy, that he's the one causing all of this. If my very minor thing, because I don't have it worked out, that the boy in white is our caretaker, is our person that's controlling all of this, then maybe that could be the case. Is our Jacob and our Smokey for you Lost fans, like a combination of the two?
Yeah, listen, the boy in white, as Sarah said, we see in season two that she didn't think he was a boy. This, because he's walking around as a boy, doesn't mean he's really a boy.
Yeah.
That's just what he's showing himself as.
How many shows have you and I watched? Yeah, how many shows have you and I watched with glamours? Mm-hmm. I mean, Melisandre, Game of Thrones, spoiler alert, Melisandre looked like a very attractive 30-year-old woman for many years of us watching a show until we finally found out she looked like George Burns in the bathroom.
Yes, she's a 500-year-old woman. Joe Burns. I haven't heard that name in a very
long time. Oh God, book two. I used to love that movie when I was a kid.
I haven't heard that name in a
Burns
very
and Gracie.
Time.
Like, I didn't even know that they had a sort of comedy team. To me, George Burns is always just the dude in those Oh God movies, and that 18 Again movie where he's, you know, the Freaky Friday switch movie type stuff. But he was, you know, a very successful vaudevillian comedian with his George and Gracie.
He got the old man. Like suave when he got old.
Oh yeah, perfect.
You know, he took the old man suave with the cigar.
Yeah,
and everything.
It's my dream that like you and I get to be like, you know.
Oh, you're like, why wouldn't you want to be George Burns?
Yeah, we're like, I'm gonna be looking like Willie Nelson, but
you think that because you think that George Burns is so cool that someone still wants to fuck him.
Yeah. And make, and I mean, my easy mind didn't think about it at the time. I was like, he's so old and still people still want to make movies with him. You know, like it's mm-hmm. still not too late to make it. Or it's, I mean, even Rodney Dangerfield to a certain extent wrote jokes for other people in his youth and then didn't make it big in his own way until he was, you know, in his later years became even more popular. Some people it does take, you know, are better as weird old men, the grumpy old men guys. I mean, they were successful younger, but once they got to be old men or Burgess Meredith or something, you know, mm-hmm. they had second careers as those grumpy old men. Anyway, sorry for the digression, everybody.
All right, let's keep going.
You okay?
You're sick, John Haymaker. No, I'm kidding.
Son, come here. This morning. Good. We're okay.
Okay, yeah, they made it through the night. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other things that happen in the night. Ellis is tying up Jade, being like, you know, he's mad, messed up. Jim doesn't trust anybody, and I don't blame him. Victor is coming into the kitchen. We meet Victor talking to Julie.
I was going to put that in there, but I just try to keep it.
Oh, no, totally. But it doesn't. That's why I take the notes, too, so we can cover a couple of the things that we don't have the sound clips for, because it's not that important. But we meet Victor in this episode. He has his peaches and he meets Julie, starts like, I'm having a conversation with her. And Fatima's like, mm-hmm. get away from her. Like, bad boy, get away from him. Mm-hmm. She has this cute relationship with Victor that goes in there. So, I think that's all that the only scene that Kenny and Father Cautry get drunk together. And I forget how cool Father Cautry is. And he's just, Kenny passes out on the stairs like I used to in my 20s. You know, just be said, I'm going to pass out right here, Tony. You know, it's Kenny has that kind of moment. But those are basically the only things that we missed in the stretch. Oh, Tony, I know that sound.
I know. Is it JP?
I don't think so. Right. Area code 505, welcome to the show. What is your question and comment, and who are you?
Is this Tony Teflon the Don?
It is. Yes. You're speaking to the Don.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited to be talking to you. And Phil.
Welcome.
I'm in the chat. I'm Ahmad Khans. Cool. And I'm in Ohio.
What's the name again? Say it again.
Freaking love your channel, Tony. It is awesome.
Thank you.
What was your screen name again?
It's Ahmad Khans. I just recently became a channel member.
Okay. Oh my God. I'm about to find you. Have you commented?
It's a picture of me holding my cat when he was a kitten.
Aww. What's your cat's name?
Phoenix.
Oh, cool. Do you have a question about From or comment about From?
No, I just wanted to let you guys know. I love the channel so much. And when they had it on Amazon in the spring or whenever it was, they had season one on Amazon. That's how I got watching it, right? And of course, I immediately went to YouTube to see the series and everything. And Tony, I found your channel, and it's like, I mean, nobody can do the deep dives like you do. And, you know, the interviews with the cast and everything like that. It's just, this channel is just awesome. I love it.
Thank you so much. We do have an on-set interview that we will be doing very soon. Like we did last year, we did the on-set interview while they were recording. We'll be doing another on-set interview. We'll see if we can get any tidbits out of them while they're doing the on-set interview again. But thank you. I truly appreciate it. 100%. Thank you for subscribing and 100% being a member. Truly, truly appreciate it.
And hey, Phil, I have to tell you, I'm one of the few people in the world who actually loved the season ending of Lost.
Oh, me! I didn't hate it either. In the sense, I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I just think the season leading up to the conclusion is the worst season of Lost, but I think the actual conclusion isn't too bad.
Well, I loved every season. I watched it, you know, when it was airing. Anyway, the only reason I'm bringing it up is because a lot of times you'll use Lost like an analogy for things, and I just want you to know, I think it's really helpful. I love that you do that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, we all think that the series is going to end with Walt showing up at the boat and being like, get on the boat, Michael, get on the boat.
And Lost is going to be on Netflix. It's about to be on Netflix, I think, starting next year. So if anyone hasn't seen Lost and you're looking, want to see it, just go on Netflix. I'll have everything up there for Lost.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for calling on in. This is awesome. We hope you call back again in the future when we get into season, or we're going to be doing these almost every week. We're going to take some breaks in January when Tony and I are away, but we hope you call in again.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Great call. And thank you so much, Colin. Call.
That's it. And break the ice. You know, you call in. This is what the show is about. 781-990-8509. You know, we definitely do that. We see KP.
KP is angry. We're going to be on either Tuesday or Wednesday nights in the foreseeable future. One of the two evenings, depending on. I sometimes have band practices on the opposite nights, and Tony's being flexible with switching it on some of those weeks. But so we'll be on Tuesdays and Wednesday nights, KP. And don't make dates on nights that we're doing podcasts.
That's it, man. That's it. Let's keep the going.
Love you, KP.
She knows there's something they must have been. This right here. Let's I'm gonna pause this and we're gonna listen. One second.
This is the Sarah monologue.
Yeah, this is one of the most important monologues that you're gonna hear in this show.
And it's very, as you rewind this, it's very well delivered. This is an episode of amazing monologues, and I think Sarah, the actress who plays Sarah, holds up to the amazing performance that Liz does in this episode too. She creates this menace about her character. I know people always say, oh, that person could play the Joker. She could play the Joker. She just has this this menace about her. And I know she's not crazy. I said crazy earlier, and you're right. She's being influenced by voices she just can't say no to, because in her mind, she's rationalizing that they are the answer to get the hell out of this place. Mm-hmm. So she's actually trying to listen to these whispers and help. In her mind, she's just trying to help, and she's sorry and everything like that. This isn't her going mad. It's just her being manipulated and influenced, or maybe doing what needs to be done to help them finally get out of this place. To your point, maybe she has to do this for Jade to do what he does, and for Michael, Lost fans, and Boyd to go out, as you're pointing out, to go out into the woods at the end of the episode and be motivated to do that.
No doubt about it. All right, we're going to listen to what she's saying, tell me after we hear her, Phil. I want you to tell me what you think of it as soon as you hear it. You should get it as soon as you hear it. Here we go. Let's listen to it.
Now I'm scared I'm not going to get it.
Sun's coming. It's morning. Good. We're okay.
Do you know the story about the little girl in a room filled with broken glass?
No.
She knows the broken pieces used to mean something. She knows there's something they must have been. But all she can see are the shards. And when she tries to put them back together, they cut into her skin. Cutting deeper and deeper. And she bleeds all over the floor. She keeps on trying. She keeps trying because she knows there's an answer. She knows there's a shape they used to make.
Sarah.
I hear their voices. And it's just like the broken glass. They told me it had to look like it was the monsters. I didn't want to.
They're like Tony Soprano. They have to
set the scene. It was the only way to save us. It was the only way to go home.
Sarah. Please, just tell me what you did.
I don't know, dead man.
All right, so we hear her talk about this, the little girl with the broken glass, and Who the hell ever heard of that story? No one ever heard of that.
No, no, that's not like the boy that cried wolf, Tony. It's yeah, like it's not a story people know.
That's the gingerbread man.
No, we're not talking about the Goldilocks and the three bears or something.
You ever hear the story about the little boy he cut off his foot?
Yeah.
Let me tell you about it. No one heard that shit.
No, no, Sarah. No. That's the Big Lebowski. You want a toe? I'll give you a toe, Tony. I'll get you a damn toe.
But what she's saying here in this story is that same thing that Kenny says later on, like his father would say, that you can't see the sweater when you're looking at the thread.
Yeah, you can't see the forest within the trees or whatever, whatever that thing
and
is.
And this is what she's trying to say, that it may look like shards of glass on the floor, but it really is it's a picture.
Yeah.
But you can't see the whole picture. You have to look at it, but it could hurt you. It reminds me of Jade, right? Putting together the image, which is he does. He breaks the bottles when he's inside of the bar. And he breaks all the glass bottles and he tries to put them back together, looking at the pieces of how they fit, how they would fit together. And then he makes a symbol out of the glass bottles.
And you could say the same thing about the pictures. And I mentioned him before, but the person who designed all the pictures also are a puzzle that needs to be carefully deduced and figured out. And the artist who does all that, just to give him a shout out, Colin Canning, not a Canning on Instagram, if you guys want to follow him. And he's the guy who does all the drawing.
Ooh, we're allowed to say that? He said he didn't want to be it.
Yeah, I can share. Sure.
I guess so.
We did before. We did during the during.
All
the
right, all right. He doesn't want to come on, but he's
No. He doesn't mind people checking out his work and checking out his Insta, but he'd rather step back and listen to it all. But we're getting him in season two. I'm making.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I've talked to him a bunch. Me and him are cool. You're coming on in season two, buddy.
season three. Yeah, I think that's what she means when she says that you know, and that's what the whole thing. That's what this is. The answer has already been shown to us. We just can't see it because it's only a shard of glass. But they've given us a bunch of shards, and the answer is there.
Yeah.
Have to put these pieces together and we can figure this thing out, and that's what we're trying to do on this podcast and on this YouTube channel, is trying to get it, look back at things that they have shown us and see if we can figure out exactly what's going on.
And I mean, that's what you do. A lot of people, I mean, I know you have your strong beliefs, and but you're also amazing at just doing the theory crafting and putting out the possibilities. I think what sometimes with theories type stuff, we're offering up possibilities. We're not saying, oh, this is exactly the thing, showing what is likely, what is not likely. And I do think that this series has been very actively laying the clues to the sense of this, the pieces are there to put together. I don't think it's one of those things that they're just making up random stuff and throwing it at the screen. I think the narrative of the complete story is crafted and they're just unleashing it, and this isn't they're making it up as they go. I think they have a distinct endpoint in mind and they're giving us the clues to get there. Personally, that's the vibe I get. Whether people are going to be happy or not, Tony, is a different story. But I do think
you can't make everyone happy. So, you know, and people don't want to see it to be certain things, and it's going to be what they don't want it to see.
Yeah, people don't want to be aliens, and it's going to be aliens.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to want it to be fairies, and it's not. And they'll probably be upset. All right, let's continue a little bit. We don't got that much left. We only got, like, I think 3 minutes left of audio.
Aw, no. I'm having a good time.
Kenny, wait. So this is the part when Kenny gets down to check on his father.
Oh yeah, is this where they pull in front and he runs in quick ahead of everybody? Yeah. And again, we see his father's face completely not completely unharmed, but everything from the neck down is just
jacked.
Yeah, exactly. Completely jacked.
And then Father Kotri says, "Let me go first."
Do you think they made a mistake killing Kotri too soon?
I like the character of Father Kotri. I really do. I think that I would have rather him be alive.
I'm going to bring this up at the end, but have you seen any of the casting notices for season three?
No, no, I haven't.
Okay, let me get that information up so we can talk a little bit about it at the end.
Where's the family?
Well, the Kachi's bringing them back up to Colony House.
They shouldn't be up there.
That's what they wanted. It's only for the night. What are you doing out here?
I love how Boyd has little sensitivity for people's shit. What are you doing? Rub some salt on that.
Here's the pieces. We made it together. It's one of the only things we ever, it's ruined now. Blood soaked into the wet. You know, with my dad, every single game always in the same way. I'd be down on my last piece, and I just keep moving around the same three spaces trying to avoid him. Those things, they walk, they never run. You ever notice that? It's like they're taking their time because they know there's only so many places we can go. I think we're running out of spaces on the board, Sheriff.
We talked about this a little bit earlier, what the significance of that is, that conversation.
Yep. And it's definitely, I think this is an episode with three really intense monologues. And I think they all sort of connect in a way of the pieces running out, you know, not being a lot, like there is some sort of connective tissue with all of them, especially Sarah's and Kenny's here. And I can't find the post right now, but there's like a lot of casting about another priest that's going to be cast, Instagram influencers and stuff. I'll look for it to make so I can have that for next week or send it to you so you can.
Instagram influencers being.
Yeah, but I think they're most of the casting seemed to point that they were people that Tabitha would bump into, the outside world.
All right.
Let me see. I'm going to keep looking as long as we're here.
Why wouldn't they cast us then, goddammit?
Seriously.
Jesus Christ.
For fuck's sake.
She cast us.
I mean, where
put us on the show.
We're ideally the best people for this.
Norman, they made it back from the Lake of Tears. It wasn't too late. You're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Hey. Okay. What are you looking at?
Nothing.
And then he spots a creepy little freaking boy in white.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a creepy look by him.
Well, the music is to make you know it's creepy.
And he kind of
that wasn't savior music.
No,
like,
it was
like oh, we found the way out. This is the music to give you to let you know this something bad is here.
Yeah, the horrible the bad guy has come.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree.
And then you get the again the mention of the Lake of Tears again. And you get her switching it up and being nice to her brother instead of being mean as she's always been. And saying everyone's, after they make it back from there, everyone's going to be okay.
And John Haymaker, I agree. And if anyone wants to write a pilot, Tony and I would happily act in it.
No doubt about it.
we're for hire. We're yes. both individually and as a team. for hire, and yep. I mean, we'll protect the other one if the other one gets hired, but we're both here for hire for anybody.
Yes, whatever you wish. I'm in very good shape now. You know, I'm bench pressing 235 pounds. I'm in good shape right now. So, you know, I'm ready for the gig.
I can still run a 40 pretty fast. No, I'm kidding. my 40 speed isn't bad, but no, I'm kidding. But Kenny tops off this episode in a really awesome way. And then obviously the boy in white is introduced at the end here. It's one of the things going into season two, looking back, they did a lot more with the boy in white in season one than they did in season two. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's one of those things I hope comes back in season three. I hope we get a lot more boy in white, but to me, boy in white's end game. So you're not going to get into it as much till you start getting into that end game of the series, because yeah, you can't, there's probably not too much to unpack. So when you unpack it, it's the end of the series.
Yeah. What that.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about Porn Stash again, Lady Stoneheart.
Oh yeah. It's going to be amazing. Let me get the porn stuff. Well, I'm excited for that, Tony. Maybe we'll try to bring the actress on again and let and talk to her. Talk
oh, to that'd Molly, be amazing.
While we do the porn stash episode, have her do it, drop it with us and stuff, and hang out with us while we do it. Maybe we could work that out with her and everything else. But yeah, that's the episode. The episode, you know, that's the episode right there. You know what I mean? And I think, again, it could be, it's definitely a top five episode of the series of all time, could be top 2-3, if not number one episode.
And I mean, that's so important. Like, even, I mean, Tony, you're a live performer as well, and a musical yep. artist. You start your set off good, you end your set off good. And same thing with television series. The first two episodes of this series is some of the fire that's carried this series through, is how awesome this series starts out. It grabs you right away and gets into this world. And I agree, as I was saying at the beginning too, I think this is one of my favorite episodes of the series too. And I mean, I can't wait till next week and talk about episode three, because, you know, it's all fresh again. Mm-hmm. But I do, thinking about the series as a whole, I do think I'm not being hyperbolic. I think this is one of the better episodes of the entire series.
It definitely is.
It ties everything well so perfectly.
It definitely does. And it fleshes out the horrors of the night and yeah. why they're afraid to go outside.
I think Tony could pull that off. I don't know if I'd be believable in that role, but it's more like Tony would be a cop that has to like connect with a stoner drug addict or something like that and convince him to help out. Like, I'm the Joe Pesci to his,
I'm Axel.
Yeah. You're Axel. And I'm I could be Rosewood, I guess. I guess I could pull off a Rosewood. I could be a Judge Reinhold. That's about my acting talent. It's about Judge Reinhold. Oh goodness.
Jen Hex says, will he be the teen in white soon? Maybe.
Yeah. Will they recast the boy in white? Or
I don't think they're gonna have to, because I don't think he's a boy. I think by that time when he gets old enough. Yeah. Let's show him for what he really is, and then that'll be it for him being a boy in white.
Yeah, I mean, boys to men still call themselves boys to men. They're not middle-aged to so I think we'll still call him the boy in white.
I mean, Lil Wayne's still Lil Wayne.
Yeah, he's not old man Wayne at this point.
Yeah, he's old man Wayne. Like, I'm still short now.
They're not adult men to senior citizens. They're still boys to men.
Men to senior citizens.
Men to, adult males to senior citizens.
And they weren't exactly boys when they got
No, they were never. The new kids on the block still call themselves the new kids on the block. They're not the new seniors on the new grumpy old men on the block.
New kids, they're the old men on the block.
Yeah, the old men on the block. The old grumpy bastards on the block.
Yeah, they're old men on the block. They ain't even on the block no more. They're in the nursing home.
The old men at the nursing home, but the old men at Wahlburgers. the old men hanging out at Wahlburgers.
Remember that time when we used to be something? Yeah. We used to be somebody back then.
We could do it. But again, this is an awesome episode. And I think in general, I did love season two, but I'm reminded as we're going through this, Tony, how perfect in some ways the beginning half of season one
is definitely better than season two, unfortunately. Yeah. I hate to say it, but it really was better. But that's not bad. Listen, Game of Thrones season one, people would say, is better than season two.
Yeah.
You know, it's season one, you know, of The Sopranos. Was it better than season two?
It's close. People argue about that, but so many shows do have better season twos than season ones, and they figure it out, or better season ones than season twos. And I do, a show like Sons of Anarchy had good season one, good season two, and a horrible season three. So it's where they're going off looking for Jax's kid in Ireland, for you people that have watched that series. I hate that season. But I do think what I'm hoping is that getting into season three, I've said this last week and I'll say it every week that we do this. The only key for me, Tony, is season one is scary. Not scary, mm-hmm. but you feel the fear in every episode. I don't think you always feel that in season two.
This is the beautiful lady who called in and we spoke to on the phone. And she says, when Sarah tells boy, she thinks the boy in white isn't really a boy. What makes her say that? Because she said boy was walking with her. And she's like, what do you got to make me believe there's some magical boy running around in a magical forest? And then she goes, I don't think he's a boy.
Yep.
When he says that. So he goes, what do you think? I got to believe that there's a boy running around in a magical forest. And she goes, I don't think he was a boy.
And Lil says, I think season ones are most likely often better than season twos in shows like this, but it could be my way of thinking. I mean, I do think in mystery box shows, there's something about that first season that destroys it in the second season. Tony talked about this a little bit during the year. I think this second season of From really second piloted it again to reintroduce things in different ways. I think season three, we've established everything. It's time to really get this story moving. And I think you're going to see that. At least I'm hoping you're going to see more of that.
Yeah, season two, they introduced a lot of new stuff. And not saying it all landed correctly, but they brought in a whole lot of new characters and everything else. So I think now they have to roll. I think this season, they have to step it up.
I love it, but some people think season two of The Wire is a step down and then come back in season three and season four. To me, I'm rewatching The Wire right now. I just started the horrible McNulty serial killer storyline. For me, I would put season two in the upper half of the season. I think it's season four, season three, season two. I don't know. It's hard for me, The Wire, but I think sometimes you do deal with shows that season two, when they break expectations or go in a different direction, it kind of sends people. And I think in season two of From, they got away from some of the stuff that was working in season one and kind of started to tell different kinds of stories, which worked. But I do think
they introduced too much, I think, too soon.
And I think the dream thing that they were doing with the wasn't quite as effectively scary as the monsters were in season one.
Yeah, and that was the fact the monsters didn't seem as much of a threat in season two as they were in season one.
They were an afterthought in season two.
Yeah, I think that was a problem too, you know, with it. And some things that they wanted to land didn't land, like Elgin, like the whole time he's supposed to have this big thing, and in the end he's just seen the boy in white.
Right, or Bizarro Fatima or whatever.
Yeah, that just didn't land right. You know what I mean? And everything else. So that was it. All right, we're going to get up out of here. We'll thank everyone for watching. Thank everyone for listening to the podcast. Make sure you do that. Make sure you hit the thumbs up for your boys out here. Make sure you subscribe to Tony Teflon, the Don's channel, Phil the Issues Guys channel, and the podcast. Go out there and listen to it and everything else. Give those the 4-star rankings on and get it ranked up there. We really appreciate it. We will be back next week with another episode. Phil, what you got going on for the rest of the week?
I'm not sure what I got going on this week, but next week we are finishing off season four of The Sopranos. It's kind of a break, but I will be covering a lot of shows starting in February. We're going to be doing the Rick Grimes, Michonne, Walking Dead series. Hopefully I'm going to get Tony on, and we're going to both be doing a little bit of True Detective in January when we get back from vacations. And there's a bunch of other shows that are coming back pretty soon in 2024, but I might pop on, and Tony and I, probably the week after Christmas leading up to New Year's, are going to do our favorite stuff of 2023 episode. So make sure you're subscribed to my channel so you can check out Tony and I doing
100%. 100%. All right. Thank you for everyone in the chat. Thank you so much. And if you like the way I do this, please, the way we do this, please spread this across the realm. Throw the thumbs up for your boys. And subscribe. And until next time, you know who it is. Peace and stay sexy.